The reason I love today's technology, and anybody comes in that I deal with, we'll start talking about the machines. I go, do you know what these are? These are accurate measurements of what you just did.
Hi, this is Tony Ruggiero of the Tour Coach Podcast. Recently, I was invited once again up to the Gurus of Golf, which is an unbelievable experience and an unbelievable event hosted by Rob Akins, one of the great teachers in the game. And all of that is done to raise money for Le Bonheur Children's Hospital up in Memphis. It's an amazing day, an amazing event. This year, Rob wanted to do something a little different, and on the evening before, have some of the great names in teaching and coaching that are part of this. The Randy Smiths, the Chuck Cooks, could go on and on. Tom Ness, who recently left us, used to come to this event. But Rob, realizing that as we all get older, there's this great generation of teachers that we should take advantage of and share some of their insights and their stories. And Rob did just that. And we're going to share them with you also. So sit back, relax, and if you love golf instruction and you want to learn, you're going to love these collections of interviews and stories with Rob Akins from the Gurus of Golf in Memphis, Tennessee.
Hey, so back with the Gurus of Golf, and I'm honored to have two dear friends of mine. One I've known for a long time. He grew up in Memphis and actually has grown up in this town with me. And the other is Mark Brooks. He played more tournaments on the PGA Tour than any human being that's ever lived. And that's a big statement. I think we figured out that he and his dear friend of his, he walked around the earth twice playing golf, chasing a golf ball for the PGA Tour. So anyway, welcome both of you, Mark Brooks. And so glad you're both with me, Tom. And so I guess, you played more tournaments than anybody alive, and now you teach golf. So you're coming at things from a perspective that a lot of us in this room, and I've taught golf my whole life, so I'm a really good teacher, but I was never a player like you are. So what do you think that really adds that you've been able to do that? Because very few players are great teachers. And I think because they can only see it through their lens. But I think you've done a great job in the last 10 years of really spending your time seeing it from a lot of lenses, you know what I'm saying? But there's obviously things that you have done in your career that I've never even dreamed of doing. So how does that work out with you as far as becoming a teacher?
It's a loaded question.
Yeah.
The first thing is I love golf.
Yes, sir.
Okay?
More than anything.
Everything about it. It's a true passion.
No doubt.
And I love what it's done for my life, my family, the people I've been around. Well, virtually every friend I have is related to golf somehow. Lifelong friends. So that part is easy for me. Imparting that passion for my students is not hard for me either.
Right.
And
I've seen that.
If they don't share that passion, and maybe it's too much for some, I'm not for everybody.
That's right.
So that's the first thing. And then secondly, I probably spend, I'm going to say at least 75 to 90% of the time I'm mentoring, because I focus primarily on kids like 14 through college. I have some tour guys or aspiring tour players that are Korn Ferry. And I'm just a firm believer that, there's once you get to a certain level, the separation is not really all technique oriented based.
So let's talk about that.
For sure.
So me and you have spent hours talking about this, but when you're talking about that, you're saying there's a lot more to playing golf than how you swing or how your putting stroke is. I mean, Billy Mayfair should have never had a career with his putting stroke.
Sure.
It didn't really matter, right? He had a pretty good career.
Well, Chuck was just here, and you commented about all the different swings, how they look different, all the different players. Right. You talk. I would argue that that wasn't a technique issue.
Right.
Meaning, moment of truth, sure. Understand, you need certain things that are called non-negotiables. You know, when that club gets in the delivery position, which is that shaft parallel to the ground, it's too late to fix it.
Right.
Okay? Better hang on and hit as hard as you can and keep going. But the point being, there's a lot of ways to get there. What I like about, and I'm going to go off the reservation here, but what I like about technology, which I didn't have.
Right.
I'll be honest with you. And my backstory was like, well, how did you, if you look, I became a good player in college. I struggled for the first 4 years. I kept my card miraculously after, 4 years, went back to Q school. And I came home from my last Q school in 1987, went to a friend of mine, and I said, I need to change. This, what I've got isn't going to make it. Right. Okay, I'm going to be doing something else.
So being brutally honest with yourself.
I'm
big step.
Finally, yeah, because I was out there chasing it. You know, I saw every teacher, you know, on a weekend after missing a cut. And I went and bought an 8mm camera. We found an empty room in our club, set up a screen, and got to work. And that was the first time I actually got to see my own golf swing.
Right.
So everything was all based on theory, feels, looking in a mirror, you know, just trying to. All of a sudden, I learned, and I use this phrase a lot, and I'm sure you all have, but it's like learning how to turn feel into real. So what it felt like wasn't what was happening.
Right.
And so once I started turning these feels into real, and then I spent that time learning my golf swing, and I picked two people to walk to, like, study their golf swing, just from what we had, rudimentary stuff. And I picked Jack Nicklaus and Tom Watson. And why did I pick those? Because those guys both released the living crap out of it under the gun. There was no hang on. And I grew up in the wind, hanging on. Those guys released it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's something there. And I get to talk to both of them about certain aspects of the swing. And again, it was not a ton of technique, but Jack, he's famously said, what'd you do for top? He goes, I released.
Sounds like good. First thing I did.
I was taught to drag and hold, you know. Like the Byron Nelson looking swing, drag that head down that line as long as you can. So long story short on that, that changed my life. I won 9 months later. And the best round I ever played was the last round of Q school in 1987. I was going to be like, get in a few tournaments, and I shot 5 under with a crappy golf swing, 5 birdies, no bogeys, and got back on tour. And that started. So it was admitting I needed serious help. Get out. Number two, grabbing some technology, what was available. And the reason I love today's technology, anybody comes in that I deal with, we'll start talking about the machines. I go, do you know what these are? These are accurate measurements of what you just did.
Just what Chuck was talking about, he did years ago, trying to measure.
Right, get the guesswork out of this.
Right.
You don't have to live by them or 1 degree off, whatever. So this game, that's why we curve the golf ball. Doesn't matter if it curves 5 yards or 10 yards, where did it end up, okay? So it's like, you can chill on this, but like, we're not going to guess anymore. We don't need to guess. So, you know, we all know James Blunt, it's in his bag. Never guess at that which you can measure.
Right.
So I love that saying, and it's like, we'd apply it to the rest of the parts of our life, we'd be better. So that's, I know I got off on a wild tangent, but so that's where it brought me to this. Now, the rest of it, I love watching people grow as people, you know, as humans, and become more responsible. Because I was one of those, you know. I mean, I was one of those.
Golf was the way of life for you.
I was one of those college kids. I mean, I had learned a lot of lessons. I mean, I learned way more from my mistakes than I ever did from my successes. So,
all of us with that
one. I remember shots. You know what shots I remember?
The ones you missed.
The ones that were devastating.
Failures, absolutely.
And what would I do? I would go home and fix that shit, you know?
Best you could.
And sometimes it's a bad decision. And those you have to live with. But anyway, so that gets you where you were trying to go with that?
I think it is. I think that's a little deeper is that this mentorship. I think we've talked,
okay.
You know, it's about more than a golf swing or a technique. And it's about, you know, what separates the people that are successful and the people that aren't. It's not like there's the most talented people in the world probably never got their card. Because they weren't good at the other facets of the game. There's more to it than just being able to swing or hit a golf ball.
100%. And I don't know what age, older. I was probably in my late 40s. And it becomes more acute as you get older. You learn what you don't know. So there's a lot I don't know. I learned a ton. The things I did know about were not really technical. They were more internal, mental. I'm fortunate. I have a super smart daughter. She's a doctor of psychology, and she's brilliant. And I've learned this from Chuck. He mentioned 1980. When do you think I actually first got with Chuck Cook? 1980. At the Hills of Lakeway. That started changing my life. Sure. I finally had actual...
real knowledge.
No, yeah, it was there. It was available. It was available, and we took advantage of it.
Right.
Bill Moretti. I could just start naming the guys that were people that came through there. So I'm going to lose my train of thought here because it kind of goes all over.
You kind of roll that one time.
I don't roll that one. That's why I don't give 50-minute lessons. Help back me up where I was here.
Mentorship. We're talking about mentorship. We're talking about there's more than hitting the golf.
Okay. This I've learned from the guy. Thank you. I have learned from my daughter, who's the doctor. There are, and I run into them, unfortunately, quite often. There are cases way over my head. This is when you learn what you don't know. Of course, man, learn a little bit of anger things, you know, how they're thinking, how they get from the range to the first tee, what do they think about out there, shot process, what's getting in a bubble, what learning, all that kind of stuff. I can do that with a lot of kids. I have a lot of kids that walk in, they need help, like serious help. And I have four or five, like, world-class sports psychologists and straight psychologists on call. And, I mean, it's like, I figured out it's over. I'm calling mom or dad and go, this, you know, y'all all need help.
Right.
Or this kid needs help. Would you please, please
right.
get in touch with this person? And it's made a world of difference on virtually every single one of them. So I'm learning when it's over my head. And it's I teach really close to Chuck, so he knows. I stick my head in all the time. We got a problem over here.
We're all doing that.
I send all my shankers to Chuck's bag.
We're all doing that. So, anyway. When Dave Johnson got inducted into the Hall of Fame. He was the teacher of the year in the nation for the PGA. So he spoke during the PGA championship. And I'll never forget, he said, you know, I'm like when you drive down through the South and you look out there in the field and there's a row of fence posts and there's a turtle on top of it. And you're a kid and you're wondering, how'd that turtle get there? How'd that turtle get on top of that fence post? Well, I saw that all the time in Louisiana. Well, somebody put him there, right? Somebody picked that turtle up after he said, so he said, I'm a turtle on a fence post. You know, I'm here, I'm teacher of the year, but I'm here only because so many other people shared so much stuff. And I think all of us in this room, if you become a great teacher, I tried to keep searching, trying to invent some new thing or see something that I haven't done, and I'd find where Seymour Dunn did it in 1876, and I thought I'd discover something new, right? So I don't think there's anything new that really can be discovered. I think we're being measuring it a little bit more, but I think there's been a lot of smart people who have worked on this for a long, long time. So thanks so much for being a part of our event. So,
Tommy, I'm honored to be here.
So glad you're here.
Thanks.
So, like I said, we grew up I grew up in Shreveport, but I've been here for 34 years, and you grew up here.
Yes, sir.
And played golf and was a great player and then became a teacher. And kind of tall over, and I've kept up with your career. You've been with the Gurus now for, I don't know, 15 or 16 years.
Yes.
So, you know, tell me, in your career, as you've gone in, and you were kind of really a golf machine guy, I think, in the very beginning, and a lot of us in this room spent a lot of time with the golf machine, but tell me kind of, what do you think from what you studied in the golf machine and that would have changed? Have you seen anything that really changed that, or do you still believe that that was?
That's a great question. You know, basically, you know, as we all know with the book, you know, Homer puts out 24 component motions with 144 variations. That gives you 446 quadrillion ways to swing the golf club.
Right.
The way I look at it is there's got to be one in there that this guy can do or this girl can do. And so the way I look at it is I try desperately not to teach any
one
method, so to speak. Not that there aren't checkpoints and things that people are good at or need to be in the right positions, but for that, there's different ways to swing. So all of a sudden, if Jim Furyk walks in and Bobby Jones and Jack Nicklaus, you know, for three and four different lessons, I've got a bunch of different ways to teach these particular players. As far as, I think a lot of the stuff, because the book was written in 1969, I think a lot of the stuff that Homer came up with was genius. There have been a few things that have been amended as time has gone on, now that we're able to measure some things, and it's helped us. But I think the 80-90% of it is still very, very relevant.
I think it's over 90%. I think it's still brilliant.
But, yeah, it's pretty good.
It's way over my head when I first started trying to learn how what it was saying, but I've had some people work their way through it. But based on geometry and facts and math, and so had to be really, really helpful, or once you understand how it goes. And I think you're right. In my career as a teacher, you can't help have a preference. You know, your eyes lean to something. You say, okay, this is kind of looking like the best players do this. And I can't say it's mine's changed so many over the years of me teaching golf. It's like one point I was convinced, you know, being a little across is better than laid off. Then 10 years later, it's like, man, laid off is definitely better than being a little bit across. But the facts are is there's all kinds of variations. So I think all of us as teachers, you try not to do that. You're trying to just work with whoever you got. But it's funny how we all go through that ups and downs.
It is definitely a melding of different ideas. And it's funny because you're right, you know, because there are times, and all of us in this room, you know, there are times when you go, I got it for everybody. This is it. This is perfect. Right. And you have four or five good lessons, four or five good days in a row, four or five good weeks in a row, and this, all right, I got this, is under control. And then Mrs. Haverkamp comes in there, and she can't get an air of warning for a whole hour. You look at yourself, and you go, I could be the worst teacher on this planet.
You know, I've said this. As a player, when I wanted to play golf, whatever I was working on, I was just young in my career, my early 20s and stuff, I was still practicing. If it was working for me, I saw it in every student I had. I mean, I just couldn't help it. I mean, I just like, oh, this is obviously going to help you. It's working for me.
100%.
And so my wife said she was pregnant, and I really realized that I was never really going to make any money playing golf professionally. And so I gave my clubs away, and I didn't hit golf ball. I didn't play around for 8 years.
There you go.
And during that time, I finally got away from anything that I was doing. It took me a while. And then I grew so much just because I was never working on anything for me. And I started really seeing what could help him, what could help him.
No question. So
it's very hard, I think, to not get sucked into that as a player. That's why I think a lot of players have
I don't play anymore.
I know
it
that.
It helps.
But I'm saying a lot of players have had a hard time with that. Larry Bird was a great player, but he wasn't a good coach. Michael Jordan, same way. I think it's just really hard when you've been so successful at what you do. You got to think, hey, that's going to work for everybody.
Yeah.
And it definitely helped me when I kind of gave up that dream of being a player and then really trying to become a good teacher. So that's,
And I think you're exactly right. I think the one thing that the book does point you in the right direction, say, you know what? What all these guys in this room teach work. And what it does, it means I might, hey, you know what? I need to listen to Tony a little bit more. I need to listen to Mark a little bit more. I need to listen to John a bit more, or Rob, or whatever. You know, and if you use what the good Lord gave you, two ears and one mouth, and use them accordingly, you'll probably learn something.
I could all be that turtle on that post.
You got it.
So thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate it.
Yes, sir.